Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to the Rich Report. You are now about to experience a close encounter of the indigenous kind. So open your mind, tune in, and let's dialogue. It happens now. Good evening, everyone. Welcome to the Rich Report, sponsored by African Americans Ain't African, and broadcast live on Blog Talk Radio in stereo. You know, we're back after taking a week off, and I gotta tell you, it always feels good to be back on the air talking with you beautiful, talented, innovative, and happy-ass engines. You know, the more I wake up, I mean, as in being woke, the more I appreciate us for being the first world humans that we are. And we are first world humans. It feels good to say it too, doesn't it? I mean, when you discover the truth, it feels good that you just see things from a totally different perspective. At least I do. I can't speak for everybody else, but I certainly do. And I just like to share that with you guys because, damn it, we don't share enough. We share too much negativity and not enough positivity. You know, that's what I see. But now, in saying that, it can also be frustrating dealing with those of us that are asleep and are just so deeply indoctrinated in the lies we've been told. It's especially frustrating to deal with those of us that are arrogant in their brainwashing. You know the ones who swear we're from Africa, that, you know, all mankind are man, humans, carbon beings, stepped out of Africa, that, you know, every plant, animal stepped out of Africa, Godzilla came out of Africa, Rodan, Mothra, hell, even Ghidorah, and that's from another damn universe. They all came out of Africa. That part is frustrating. And I go round and round with people with this on an everyday basis. Sometimes I start and instigate it. Other times I get jumped on by somebody else because of my own beliefs. And other times I jump in to aid people who are fighting a battle against, say, they're on a post and they're getting, not shelled per se, but ganged on. I jump in to help them. And I enjoy it. I really do. But it does still get frustrating. But as a lot of us today expressed on Julius Campbell's page, not everyone is going to make it. Not all of us are going to make this. Some of us are saying, hey, to quote Morpheus, some of us are so deeply inured in the matrix that they don't want to come out of it. And you know what? That's on them. I wish them well. Personally, I say if we could swap some of these Negroes out with the toys from the Land of Misfit toys, I'd do it in a heartbeat. I'd take the toys and just leave them. That's just me, though. But I would. I'd swap them out and leave them on the Island of Misfit toys. Problem solved. But that's a whole lot of us to do that in. So, hey, that's probably just me and wishful thinking and everything. And I reckon, or is it? Is it just me? I know some of y'all feel the same way, too. I know you do. You don't have to say nothing. You don't have to put your hand down. Put your hand down. But I know. All right. Moving right along. We have a really good show tonight, you engines. And this past weekend, the Accomack tribe hosted the Indigenous Indian Council Summit in Eastville, Virginia. And I got to tell you guys, it was an awesome experience. So tonight, we're going to discuss the summit at length with Lauren Cypress, or Lisa Cypress, Carrie Davis. Hopefully, Anna Thunder will call in, and Tasha Shee. Tasha was having some car issues earlier. I hope everything's all right with that. And hopefully, they will get to call in, however. But before we get there, before we go there, you know what we're about to do. We're about to go to the mailbag. Man, people have been hitting me like we are duking it out for 12 rounds in a middleweight championship fight. I'm heavyweight weight, but I still like to think of myself still as a middleweight. It's all good, though. It's all good, Pete. And again, I welcome inboxes and emails from everyone. even Asians, trolls, yokels, hillbillies, spooks, niggers, sambos, porch monkeys, and tokens. I'll get to all of you eventually. So let's get to it right now, shall we? Come on, y'all, let's do it. All right, here we go. Now, keep in mind, I don't read these in advance. I take them as they come. So a lot of the times, I don't even know what's going to, you know, what it says until I read it. So that's why sometimes you'll see me reading and go, oh, hell, because somebody done wrote some crazy shit. But it comes with the territory. So let's see what this one says. This first one comes from Macy. Macy is a guy. Okay, let me see. This first one comes from Macy, who writes, Gabriel, I didn't quite understand what you were saying about how hip-hop has changed. Boy, y'all want that hip-hop, though. I'm 24, and I think we're in the golden age of hip-hop. But your comment has me curious. Please explain. Okay, Macy, I know what you're talking about. And for the record, we're not even remotely in the golden age. not remotely. We ain't even in the cubic zirconia age of hip hop now. That the golden age is far, far past us. The golden age started in the '80s actually and ended in the mid-90s. If you want to say it was a golden age from 94 on, I know a lot of the younger cats think that, but no. The golden age actually started from 79 and then on all throughout the '80s decade into the '90s. We're past that. We're well past that. And what I was saying, Macy, is this and how hip-hop has changed and what changed it. It used to be once upon a time that the MC had carte blanche status, or I should say the DJ had carte blanche status over the MC. And to even be an MC, you had to have a DJ. You dig? LL Cool J had Cut Creator. Rakim had Eric B. Run DMC had Jam Master J. It was Grandmaster D for Houdini. And we could go on and on and on and on. Obviously, Grandmaster Flash. It was called Grandmaster Flash in the Furious Five, not the Furious Five and Grandmaster Flash. You dig? And that was because it was your DJs that had, really, they had a higher status over the MC. The MC was secondary to the DJ. And by their scratching was kind of like the equivalent of sonic smoke signals. And you knew every DJ scratch was different. And you could differentiate Eric B's scratching was different from Grandmaster Flash's scratching, who was different from Jazzy Jeff's scratching, who was different from, and you could get all of this. So much so that they even made scratching like a musical instrument. The turntable's a musical instrument and scratching a part of music. What happened was pretty simple. Just like with R&B groups, they say you got the lead singer in an R&B group. Okay, the label will step to that singer since he's the one singing on all the hits. May not have wrote the hits. May not have, you know, of anything. Just the singer, right? What they did was they convinced the MC that they didn't need the DJ. That's what they did. They convinced them that they didn't need the DJ anymore, that you can stand on your own. You know, you don't need a DJ. You don't, you know, blah, 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 blah. Just like they did with the lead singer. Same difference. David Ruffin left. Eddie Kendricks left. Started on their own. JT Taylor left Kool & the Gang. We can go on and on and on. The number of guys who went on solo careers, right? Most of them, however, didn't fare as well as they did when they were in their groups or in their bands. Very few, there's few exceptions, actually, Lionel Richie. But, you know, he was dancing on the ceiling. You knew he had shot his wad with that one. But you get my point. So it pretty much caused a shift in the music. The music became less artistic in hip-hop. And pretty soon what you found out was the MC, a lot of them could be controlled by the labels. So that's when you started having cats start spouting anything at the request of their labels. You dig? Because a lot of the times, the one who did a lot of the talking was the actual DJ in the earlier days. So things kind of went downhill and gradually in decline. Let's put it that way with hip-hop. Hip-hop, you know, a culture, an art form to what it is now, which is trash. So no, Macy, you're not in the golden age of hip-hop. I get that you believe that. You're 24 years old, and you probably don't go back and listen to a lot of stuff. But I would advise you to go back. Start back. Hey, this is what white folks do. We don't. Our youth don't. they will go back and start with the very first hip-hop record that they know of. All right, and ironically now, the very first hip-hop record that I remember was King Tim III by the Fatback Man. It was not Rapper's Delight. That came a little bit later. King Tim III is the first one. But that I remember. It certainly was the first one to be released. Go back and listen to all of that music from that time. All right, go back and listen to, the Sugar Hill Gang, the Furious Five, Spoonie G, all the guys from back then, the Treacherous Three. Go back and listen to, the Funky Four Plus One, all these guys. Go back and listen to them. Okay, now, when you do, particularly with the Sugar Hill Gang, just remember that, yeah, they weren't really what you would call great rappers per se, because, that wasn't really, they weren't really even known on the scene. And Big Bang Hank never wrote his rhymes. Grandmaster Caz did. But the whole point is, still, go back and listen to the evolution of the music, and you'll see a vast difference from then to now. Because the worst part about the music now is, it's not music anymore, really. It's just a beat, a sample. And Diddy started that, too, because he corporately co-opted hip-hop. When all of a sudden now you can only play a snippet of a sample where you basically looping a whole sample almost the song. A lot of these songs you wouldn't even listen to without the sample, if we're honest about it. So that's what I'm saying, Macy. It's when they killed off the DJ, when they killed off the importance of the DJ and how scratching was a language in and of itself. It was a form of communication in and of itself. They killed off the artistic aspect of hip-hop to a large degree. A large degree. And hey, hit me up. I can give you some articles that you can check out and you can read for yourself. But it is what it is with that. And if you talk to somebody who's older than you, let's say somebody who's really into hip-hop, they're going to tell you the same thing more than likely. All right? So I hope that answers your question, Macy. And thank you for writing in. All right. This next one comes from Dan, who writes, Gabriel, seriously, do you see a renaissance with today's black QBs? There stands a chance that a black quarterback just might be the league MVP this year. No, Dan, I don't see a renaissance. I don't see a renaissance at all. A renaissance will only happen when you get 32 teams and let's say 20 of those teams start a Negro quarterback. Then you can start talking renaissance. And we've already had an MVP. We had Steve McNair in 04. He was the MVP of the league. And the wild part is he was co-MVP. They wouldn't even give him the outright MVP. He was co-MVP. He should have been the outright MVP, all things considered. But you know, we've seen this before. Our quarterbacks maybe stretching and changing the game. Yeah, from the more traditional style of where the quarterback stays in the pocket and doesn't run, but you had white quarterbacks that did that as well. Hell, to this day, the best scrambling QB I ever saw was Fran Tarkenton. Now, when I say scramble, I mean just that, not taking off and running up the field. I mean running around in circles almost with Fran until he was able to get a pass off. He's still the best one that I've ever seen. But in terms of stretching the field like a Lamar Jackson, who's doing the same thing that Vince Young did, who did the same thing that Randall Cunningham did, and we can go on and on. All right, yeah, we've kind of like, I won't say revolutionized the sport. Basically, what we did was we took the sport back to our game, because remember, we invented this sport, Dan. So the person who was the quarterback, and that he would either back in the different eras would either run or throw. Now, in saying that, to be taken seriously as a real, true quarterback, you got to stand in that pocket and you got to find your receivers. You got to be able to beat a team from the pocket. There's going to come a time where teams just aren't going to let you run, particularly in the playoffs. So you have to be able to beat a team from the pocket. Now, we've got some quarterbacks today that can do that. Certainly Russell Wilson can do it. Brother from Houston. The quarterback in Houston, he can most certainly do it. Jacoby Brissett for the Colts, he can beat you from the pocket. He doesn't even really like to run anyway. Yeah, Deshaun Watson. Deshaun Watson can beat you from the pocket. And you've got quite a few others that can you know, can navigate the pocket well. But overall, we've got a long way to go in terms of navigating the pocket and being able to know when to win. Mike Vick, it took Mike Vick the longest time to navigate the pocket. One reason was he was so physically gifted. If he took off and run, you weren't going to catch him. But even then, that catches up to you. Remember, he broke his foot the first time. He got ran down by a linebacker. And Mike Vick runs a 4-3. But you can catch somebody in space, pretty much catch them in space and get them, and that's what happened to him. Randall Cunningham is probably the most physically gifted quarterback I have ever seen. Randall ran a 4-2. He could throw the ball about 80 yards. He could do pretty much anything that he wanted to do. And what did they do? What did the Eagles do during his prime years? They wasted him by not giving him a quarterback's coach. He only had one, and that guy died before the season started. The coaches would just tell him to go out there and make it happen. And he did until the playoffs came around. The difference with Randall was he could do things physically that just most quarterbacks even today can't do. Mike Vick couldn't do a lot of the things that Randall Cunningham could do. So if you want to credit someone for maybe revolutionizing the game or taking it to a new era, I would credit Randall. And in saying that, the greatest passer ever, so I don't care what color, Doug Williams could literally throw 100 yards. His only weakness was early in his career, he could break his receiver's fingers because he threw so hard, or break their wrists. He was known to do those things. But once he developed touch on the ball, it's I'll put it to you this way. It's not a surprise that he's the first Negro QB to win a Super Bowl. It's not a surprise. All things going. I've seen Doug Williams falling down, three quarters of the way down. Almost, he's literally horizontal with the field. And flick of the wrist, throw it 60 yards on a bullet on the dot. Hits the receiver right in the hands. So all the years of them talking about us not being smart enough to be QB, what they were saying was those niggas are too physically gifted and we don't want them playing this game where they're actually calling the shot. You realize right now Deshaun Watson calls his own plays. Doug Williams called his own plays a lot of times, especially when he was in Tampa Bay. But that was also back in an era where most QBs called their own plays. They would get plays in the huddle and then they would weigh them. Terrible for not being the smartest man, but he called his plays. He called his own play. So obviously he was pretty bright enough to do that. So you're not seeing a renaissance. What you are seeing, however, is that teams want to win. And so now you got to put the best guy out there available to win. And what you're also seeing is the game evolves. It changes. You got now, they've gone from having the big 6'7", 300-pound defensive tackle, or defensive end, I should say, who's just crowding the line now. You got shorter guy, 6 feet, 6'1", strong, quick, and fast like Aaron Donald, who can come right up the middle. And that, for a throwing quarterback, that's the worst thing to see is a guy coming up the middle because you can't step into the throw. So a guy like Lamar Jackson, he has run. Unfortunately for the league, fortunately for Lamar, you can't catch him when he does. So, no, I'm not a renaissance yet. We got a long way to go with that, just like with film. We got a long way to go before we have a renaissance. That's when we start dominating things. We've had a music renaissance many times over. But in football and other aspects of the game, linebacker renaissance, yes. Defensive end renaissance, yes. Defensive lineman renaissance, yes. Defensive back renaissance, always, because we were always the best defensive backs and receivers. But quarterback, not quite yet. But I do believe that it will get there, and sooner than later, because at the end of the day, again, teams want to win. All right, Dan, so I hope that answered your question, buddy. And we'll get this last one, who is from Jay Paul, who writes, I saw Tasha C's video, and it stated, in it, you stated the Civil War was a red herring. Can you explain? Okay. All right, Jay Paul, I'll be real brief on this, because I did touch on that briefly at the summit. I say the Civil War is a red herring, and I'm not the only one that says this. I actually got this from this Negro Confederate dude. God, I can't think of his name right now because I'm thinking about it. He was on the tip of my brain before, but I'll get back to you. I'll post it on my page. And he said that the Civil War was a red herring. And I thought to myself, now, why would he say that? Then I contacted him, and he told me some really, really deep stuff. Really deep stuff. Because on the outside, again, we've been taught to hate the Confederacy, even though it was ours. We've been taught to hate like words like cotton, plantation, all of this stuff. We've been taught to hate it, right? So he looks like a fool when he's out there in his Confederate gear with mostly white people around him. But the deal is, he's the smartest guy in the room. And he actually treats them kind of like subordinates. And the reason being, and this is why the Civil War was a red herring, is this. Okay, England had inroads to the South, as you know, more so Virginia than anywhere else. Okay, remember that. England had inroads to Virginia, more so than any other southern state. Definitely Virginia. Okay. England heavily invested in the northern states and kicked the Dutch out of New Amsterdam and then renamed it New York, right? As in York, England. As in, you know, all of these new states, Jersey, New Hampshire, New whatever, New Bedford, cities, states, all the New England states. And after they started the Industrial Revolution in England, it then came to America. The problem was is they didn't have the product that they needed for the Industrial Revolution. And that main resource that they needed was cotton. Well, the North doesn't really produce cotton. The South did, however, and most of the Confederate states or Southern states that succeeded from the Union were dominated by Negroes who were the main plantation owners. Okay? The main plantation owners. Now, keep in mind that this coincides with the Homestead Act that was enacted in 1860. Okay, Homestead Act in 1860. The Civil War starts in April. On April 12, 1861, the Civil War, 1861, it started. Right? Of the same year, the Confederate capital was the city of Montgomery, Alabama. It went from Montgomery, Alabama to Richmond on May 8, 1861. So basically, you take the Confederate capital in Montgomery, which is in the heart of the Confederacy, which is in the heart of Dixie. And yeah, we came up with that term too, Dixie, that's us. But okay, so you take it from there, you put it in Richmond, Virginia, which is a stone's throw away from Washington, D.C. So the fix was in right there. So a lot of your white Confederates, okay, who had power and standing, and that wasn't very many, but the ones that did, essentially, in a nutshell, let me put it this way because we're pressed for time, they sold out the Confederacy. They sold out the Negroes. And you had some Negroes that sold out as well. But a lot of the whites turned on them. Okay, and so when this war started, remember, okay, the North started the war. Okay, the North was getting their ass kicked for a good 2 years because they, a lot of the Negroes were actually fighting in those wars. And a lot of the Southern whites that fought in the war were a lot of indentured servants or slaves or what have you, okay, who were promised something, okay, because they were living, a lot of your whites in the South were living far better than whites in the North. Actually, the whites in the North were far poorer than the whites in the South, even those who were under indentured servitude. Actually, the whites were treated worse by white slave masters than they were Negro slave masters, believe it or not. Okay, so a lot of your chiefs of state, heads of state, in the South, they sold. The war was predetermined from the very beginning, and Lincoln was the linchpin in this because Lincoln, they needed Lincoln. They needed a Melungeon to pretty much carry on their cause, to make him more powerful to the South, which was never going to happen because the Confederate states knew what Lincoln was. They saw him for what he was. It's like when I look at Obama, I saw Obama for exactly what he was. He didn't fool me, didn't impress me. Well, the same there. But they still needed him to carry it out. They needed him more so than some cracker from, like, say, Andrew Jackson or something like that. So the war was predetermined. The the South was eventually going to win. All of a sudden, your Southern generals are going up into the North to fight, like Gettysburg. Okay, you're going to fight a losing battle. But the end game was always the land anyway, and to get control of the resources that Britain was financing a lot of this stuff anyway. And they had backing. They had backing, truth be told, because the Southern states were mainly dealing with France. Well, France turned right around and started backing Britain anyway, England anyway. So we were basically being led to slaughter because we were duped. We were duped into fighting a war that there was no way we were going to win because the very people who were at the head of fighting the war was selling us out. So that's why it was a red herring. It had to do with land. It had nothing to do with slavery. Hell, Lincoln, you know, proclaiming the Emancipation Proclamation, shit, there was slavery right there in Maryland, which was considered the North at the time. There was slavery in Delaware. There was still slavery going on in Pennsylvania. There was slavery in New York. So that had nothing to do with it. I'm not even going to get into Illinois, places like that. There was slavery there. So slavery had nothing to do with it. It had to do with resources. It was all about resources. And another thing, okay, Lincoln, what, supposedly killed in 1864? He cashed in a life insurance policy in 1866. So Lincoln's assassination was a false flag. It didn't happen. He was already he already was diagnosed with having terminal cancer in about 1862 or 1863. He only had a year or so to live. So the shooting at the Ford Theater never happened. John Wilkes Booth, by that time, who was a double spy, he was already dead by that time anyway. He was already dead. He had either been killed by the Confederates who discovered that he was spying for the Union, or he was killed by the Union who discovered he was spying for the Confederates. If I had to guess, he was killed by the Confederates. But he was dead. So they kept him on ice, really. They kept him on ice, and when the time came to bury him, you saw his body, but he'd been dead. That's why when they allegedly hung him, they kept the mask on. They don't ever keep masks on you when they hang you. They take the mask off so everybody can see you being hanged. They kept the mask on because he was dead. He hadn't done any plays about 6 months or 7 months outside of that. And keep in mind that John Wilkes Booth was famous. He would be today $100,000 a year at that time in the 1860s. He was the equivalent of today of Robert Downey Jr. He was one of the more famous actors around. So it was all stage. All of it was staged. Yeah, lives were lost, but World War I and II were both staged as well. Germany was never going to win, but Germany wasn't there to win anyway. It was all staged. All of these wars are staged. So that's why I say it's a red herring. One day I'm going to do a show on it where I can really get into it, you know, but now is not that time. But, J. Paul, I hope that answered your question somewhat. And if not, hit me up and then I can further explain. All right? And there you have it, y'all. Another mailbag down. I certainly enjoyed it as always. Didn't you? Oh, God. And I didn't even have to tell anybody to go. Well, you know what I say to the ones that really deserve it. But anyway, with that said, now, as Janet Wong would say, now, let's get down to the getting on of talking with our peeps. All right, so I'm going to bring on Carrie Davis. Yo, what's going on, Carrie?
Hey, man.
I can't call it.
Cool.
I can't call it.
How was your trip?
Okay. Oh, it was cool, man. It was cool. Driving at night, nobody's on the road. I got there in three hours, 20 minutes, something like that.
Okay,
and I didn't
cool.
speed. And I didn't speed either because, you know, they'd be out there at night. And I don't play in Virginia. I'm Virginia State Trooper. Let's see. Lisa, where are you, sister? Oh, there you go. I got you. Hey, Lisa.
Hey, how you doing?
I'm good.
Good.
I would like for you guys to tell everybody about the Indigenous Indian Council Summit, the experience that you had. And I want to thank you, Lisa, for putting that on. You and the Accomack tribe, you guys really put on a great event. I just wish you guys could have been there. I just wish you could have seen it. It was really, really nice. You know, all positive, all love.
Yeah. That was really, I mean, it really felt so good.
It did.
Felt so good. And it just felt like family, even though everybody wasn't literally family, it just felt like family, you know. And it was just, like, inspiring, energizing. And, I mean, I just feel like everybody felt like they were floating, and people are still buzzing.
Yes.
They're, like, talking about getting all their family and bringing them next time, and people want to do things, and, you know, they want to get things going. They want to keep the momentum going. So it's, like, great. Great. You know?
Yeah.
I wish that people could have, like, just kind of just walked and just made it out there because, I mean, it was crazy because the weather before that day wasn't that great. And the weather after that day was horrid. It was a hurricane. But that day was perfect. I mean, it was crazy how perfect the weather was. It was beautiful.
It was beautiful. It was gorgeous. I mean, and the best part about it, I loved about it, Lisa, how you shooed white folks off. I mean, you got a talent with shooing white folks out of the park. You can't care. Was she shooing them away or was she not?
Off the hook.
People, let me tell you, the park was closed, right? It was closed that day for us. Okay, so. White folks were coming out, and a lot of it being nosy. Okay, so Lisa would see them. Now, you had some that would drive, and they saw all of us out there, and they'd drive in and drive right back out, right? Me and Tasha saw that one. But the ones who decided they wanted to get out, they wanted to play at the park, frolic, Lisa was not having it. She got on the bullhorn, you know. She's clicking the bullhorn. Excuse me, white people.
Did not say that.
Honestly, I know you didn't say
that.
But
I
you
did
were thinking
say
it, damn
this
it.
Was a Negro, Indian Negro affair. You know, if you are not a Negro Indian lineage, you must exit the park immediately.
Oh man. You have some faces that turned beet red when she said that.
they were like, make no mistake, I'm getting the hell on.
Yeah. I think she means it, Phil. We better go.
No, they were saying, we're getting kicked out.
Yeah.
We're getting
kicked out. Oh, man. So tell us a bit about that park in that area, because, you know, it's almost like we were kind of like on hallowed ground. I mean, we were only a hop, skip, and jump away from, obviously, Southampton. We're in Northampton County, Virginia. We're only a hop, skip, and a jump away from Southampton County, Virginia. Of course, everybody knows that's Nat Turner and all that. So tell us about that area, because that's your home, correct?
Right. It is Northampton and Southampton. Actually, the area where in Southampton of Nat Turner's also, our people lived out there too, as well as some parts of Accomack County, but all of Northampton is all Accomack, and that park is where they moved us to because we always lived near the Bayside, which was where the sand dunes were and there's waves. That's the side of the peninsula that we lived on. It's a peninsula, so it connects back up in Maryland and Delaware, on the mainland, but it's across the water from the rest of Virginia, across the bay,
right.
So it's 11-mile bay tunnel bridge, two tunnels and two bridges to get to it. It's 11 miles of a bridge.
11 miles, baby.
Yeah. Not for someone who doesn't like tunnels and bridges, that's for sure. So,
yeah.
I mean, but that actual park is called Indian Town because that area of the whole county used to be called Indian Town. And prior to that, it used to be the Genghis Khan Reservation. that they, you know, push some of us to. Now, mostly, I would say mostly females were on that reservation, and hence a lot of other outside Indians married some of the actual Gengiskin Indians or Accomack Indians. Gengiskin actually means gin-drinking, saggy pants. You know, it's like it's a derogatory term that the English made up. It's not an Indian thing. That reservation name is very derogatory, as the reservation was a prison camp. It was very derogatory.
Right.
You know?
Right.
But as the years, I mean, it was established in 1640, but it was, they tried to take it away. They began getting in 1813 because they just wanted the land. They felt like we were using it. It was a couple thousand acres that they felt like they wanted. And they wanted to push us off of it, and they did. They took at least half of it by, 1831. They actually totally got rid of it because of the Nat Turner thing. I mean, they were afraid because, Indians could carry guns before that happened.
Yes.
And
yes, very much so.
That's how that whole thing, you know, happened, was because, you know, it was an Indian war. You know, you didn't have a bunch of Africans who came over on a boat who had access to a lot of ammunition. Okay, it just didn't work like that. You know, like, that's not how things would have worked. You couldn't, that wouldn't have happened. So, it's because of that they actually disbanded it. So it's the first established so-called reservation and the first one to actually be taken away. Hence, also, we didn't sign any treaties. There was no need for treaties. We were pre all that stuff. So going back to our Aboriginal selves means no treaties were signed. We made no deals with you. You know what I mean? You know what I mean? There are no agreements. You know what I mean? You know, it's just nothing. Okay. So.
Right.
I mean, so we. You know what I mean? So that there's nothing to be contested, and within themselves, there are placards around town that says, as of 1860, there are still descendants of the Accomacs living here, or the Gengiskins. And I'm like, they admitted all over the place in writing that we were still existing. You know what I mean? So,
right.
I mean, it's a known fact. So, quite frankly, you know, like, the lack of development in the era to me represents the fact that they were just always waiting for the day when we were going to go and claim our, you know, our inheritance, our heritage, you know, except
right.
The oppressiveness of the whole place has a lot of the people that actually lived there day to day and stayed there extremely, hesitant to do so, you know. However, guess what? They got cousins. They got a lot of cousins who moved away. And those cousins that moved away have the same heritage. They have the same exact bloodline that they have. We are,
right.
We have the same exact level of connectiveness to the soil, to the people that they have, except we just grew up in different places. So, I mean, they don't have to do anything for the Accomacs to make their full claim of who we are and reestablish ourselves. They could be silent if they want to be silent. It's okay. It's not
right.
going to stop the flow of what's happening, you know.
Gotcha.
In addition,
gotcha. Hey.
After this whole summit, I was wondering, because I was being considered as a daughter of the revolution, you know, because I, you know, our family, you know, descends from revolutionary soldiers, right? And
right.
I went to a their you know, they have their little private meetings in each other's houses, and I was there, the only Negro Indian or Indian of any sort or Negro of any sort, and they wanted me to do a presentation because basically they wanted to interview me and you know, analyze me, and I did
yeah.
a presentation about being about Indians and women today and Indian women, and you know, so they invited me to join, and they actually have been contacting me this week to go ahead and get that application in, so they could actually submit me. So, I mean, they know who we are. They are not trying to block. You know what I mean? They know the
right.
truth. So it's not. It's just. It's just about you knowing yourself. You know what I mean? Because they actually know. You know, it only makes sense. They fully understand it, even if they didn't know it. Whether they did or didn't know it, they know it now. And it actually rings true to them more so than it does to some of our brothers and sisters. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Some of our brothers and sisters just can't handle it. It is so, they can't handle it. I got somebody who didn't make it on Saturday talk about let's do a family reunion. If your family reunion is not about you organizing yourself as an Aboriginal, you are failing life. The only reunion that any Negroes in this country who have a history of being in this country pre-Civil War, the only family reunion you should have, it should be an Aboriginal family reunion in which you are organizing yourself. Point blank, period. You are completely idiotic and lost if you get together and that's not the sole focus of your get together.
Right.
You're wasting your time, you know?
But,
hello?
Now, I understand. And not like I said, you got to find that. Okay, so in saying that, we still had, I would say we had people from all over the country. People from South Dakota, Ohio. Obviously, Georgia, New York, you know, once
California,
had, brother Bam,
California, called, Florida.
Yeah,
it was crazy. It was really crazy. And you know, people were like lit, and they were ready, and they were driven to be there. You know, and what we said was like everybody that was supposed to be there was there, like. And I think that's true. I think that's very true, you know. However, like, I think that the momentum that was established there, I need to kind of, like, jump off in various places. So I really think that think tanks need to start happening. Like, you need to have a think tank, like, meeting in, like, New Jersey or New York and then, like,
right.
Philly or Maryland. North Carolina, Florida, Alabama. You know, we need to start, you know, having think tanks, having meetups. It doesn't have to replicate the summit, not that expenditure. But we need to have that kind of, we need to have meetings where we come to agreements about some things like, what do you call yourself if you don't have an actual tribe? Like, if you don't have an actual people, a nation, what do you call yourself? You know, that needs to be agreed upon. Like, are you Aboriginal, Amerindian? Are you, you know what I mean? Like, because American Indian, the East Asians are taking that. They call themselves American Indian all over the place. So
yeah, but we know they're not the real deal.
Right, we know that. But does that mean we should say Amerindian? Should we say Aboriginal, Amerindian? Which clarifies. But anyway, I don't know. But some kind of consensus needs to be reached about things. We need to establish a way for people to actually be able to etch out their status without necessarily having defined, you know, an exact, you know, nation that they belong to. A lot of people belong to several nations, you know.
Yes.
I think people need to, they need the roadmap. You know, I know I've done a blank form for people that are outside of being ACOMAC so that it could work for something like that I want to share. But, you know, I think we need to, you know, find a way to kind of get people on the right page to doing it so they're not ignorant on what they're doing.
Yeah,
you know,
well,
so they're just not going through the motions of doing something and are not informed about what they're actually doing, who they're stating that they are and how, you know what I mean? So, you know, that's a problem. That's a solution. The solution is we need more. We need to do more.
Yes, that actually is the solution. Despite what some people feel, I'm not calling you a nigga. We do need to be around each other more, dialogue more in person. It makes a big difference when you're talking in person as on Facebook or even this show. It makes a huge difference.
Right.
You back, bro?
Yes, sir.
Hey, tell us your experience with the summit. How was it for you?
It's not even no words, brother. Because what we were seeing, it was like you're thinking. And when I go to places like that, in these far off towns, because where the Accomax was, it's not a major city. It's not like Baltimore or New York or nothing like that. It's kind of a midtown, and you can get a feel of how the people actually lived without the future bought into it. You could tell how the people were living just by the environment. And God damn. Man, dude, I'm serious, man, and that's what I mean, dude. Here we are, we're hoeing ourselves out to the world trying to be something else, and your home is right here, and other people come and pimping us like hoes. And we saw what we going up there. We ran into the cotton field, miles and miles and miles of cotton field. That's your industry. That's our industry that we don't profit off of. Why? Because we want to be something else.
Yep. And remember,
right.
One time, about 98% of the world, just from the South alone.
Damn. And that's what gets me. It's like, how do we look at this and ignore this and just mamby-pamby around this and act like none of this is going on? How do we do that?
Right.
Damn good question.
How do we do that?
Damn good.
So it was a beautiful experience. The Accomax, hey, the name is even cool.
Yeah, it is.
The Accomax. And Lisa showed us. And this sister, listen, this sister does research, impeccable. The way the Accomax was spelled when they first found the Accomax. I would say what we should do as people, find the closest cities or the closest places to where your people live. When you find out where they live, get the name of the major name of it. Like the Accomax, it's all over the city. Find out those people, and when you find out their name, take the vowels out of the spelling of the name and then pronounce it, and that'll be closer to what you are than how they're trying to pronounce it. Because when they try to pronounce it, they put those vowel sounds in it to draw it out.
Yeah.
You know, so I think that's a simple way, to find your folks. Another way to find your folks, but it was beautiful, absolutely beautiful.
It was. You know, the first thing that when you're there, because like you said, it's not as civilized, wink wink, as say Norfolk, which is right across the bridge. Okay, so. When you go to Northampton County, the thing that you can literally see the past in the present. And the thing that you noticed mostly was when Caucasians got there, when Europeans got there, period, no matter if they were Caucasian or if they were melanated, they found a paradise.
Right.
They found a paradise in that area. That place is beautiful. I mean, it is beautiful.
Right. Right.
That's the one thing
right.
immediately. And when you took us to the bay, when you took us to, you know, the other end of the bay, where you showed
the,
us where
the
it was
seaside. Uh-huh, the
yeah.
seaside. Uh-huh.
Yeah, the seaside. Yeah, you can see all the beauty in it, and you can also see why they won't develop. They'd rather keep people poor than to develop it, and we all come up in commerce.
Right.
Developing that
right.
side, yeah.
Right. It's that's what it is. They'd even starve out the they starve out and even, you know, actually not have opportunities for their own children, just not
exactly.
to have any opportunities for us, you know.
For us.
And you
exactly.
know, do understand that there was a time when, you know, we were. I mean, every time you look back, if you don't understand that the Negro is the Indian, you have to understand that from Jump Street, from Anthony Johnson being one of the wealthiest people in 1652, okay, from that, and then keep going 200 years past that to the 1850s, 1900s, people had businesses. People had gas stations that were Negro in Northampton. My grandfather had a pool hall / you know, pop store / whatever store. You know, my aunt had a little used, you know, clothing boutique. People had business. It was a vibrant place at one point before the hate, before
right.
the resentment, you know what I mean? And after that, World War One and Two, when we came back with feeling like we also had certain other rights. Let me tell you, every time we went to war, whether it was the Revolutionary, the Civil War, World War One, World War Two, we came back with a little extra something. And every time we came back, the racism and oppression got worse, okay? So every time we got back and tried to step up and do more, they tried to put us down and destroy all that more, you know? And all these efforts, all these things coincide. So trust and believe, even though it's really the worst that it's ever been now. But there was always a time, whenever you look back in these old towns, whether it's here, where the Clotilda was in Alabama, where the Yamacraw are, and daggone Savannah, Georgia, there was always a time when we were vibrant, when we had something going on, because we always rise and we always produce and we always are entrepreneurs. However, they make an effort to bomb us just like they did in Oklahoma. They're bombed in different ways. They burn us down. They burn us out. They chase us out. They, you know, they economically starve us out. They intimidate anybody from any of our people from going to our own businesses. These things happen. This is replicated all over the country. So, I mean, we have a lot that's right in our own families if we just look there, okay? And we don't want to be crawling all over Atlanta on top of each other, being pushed out of our daggone place there, or being pushed around from here to there, or in New York or Philly, or, you know, wherever we ended up, you know, when we have actually our own place in this world, the soil that actually is in our soul is right out there.
Yeah. 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 Most definitely. The only thing I regret that didn't happen was we didn't get to a question and answer period. But other than that, I mean, everything just flows beautiful.
Right. By the time we got to question and answer, everybody was like, a lot of people had gone. So that was one thing. And then they were like, I asked like 3 times, but nobody was like asking anything. So I think that, you know, I think that it was just like, it should have been done earlier. Like, I should have done it when we had like the full crowd
right. And
everybody was all engaged. And before I broke, they should have did the question and answer. And that would have been a better timing.
I think in the beginning, people were there really more to listen than
right.
you know, to ask questions. Because, okay, when we had our break, I got asked a lot of questions by people, you know, that I came across. And I'm sure Carrie did too. I'm sure Tasha did, and I'm sure Andrew Thunder did as well. So we were the
right.
For those who didn't see Tasha's video, Carrie was a guest speaker along with Tasha, along with Andrew Thunder and myself. And you know, I was just happy to be there, to be in that environment. Now, and here's the deal. Now, I had a workshop webinar last year around this time. It was actually in August, up in Harlem, right? Not very many people attended, but the people who were there, it was considered in that room, right? Because we were in a brownstone, actually, in Harlem, and vibe. It was myself speaking and Phoenix Moon. But the vibe was great. It was a great vibe. Now, multiply that times, you know, 10, being out there in a park like that, in nature, a beautiful day, you know, people were there to vibe. You know, the energy was just, it was palpable. That's the best word that I can use for it.
Yeah. Yeah, the thing I liked so much was that we had young and old people. Like, the
yes.
old people was lit. You know what I mean? The really elders, like 90, you know, 90-year-old, 88-year-old people were lit. They were lit.
Yeah.
You know? And that was like, that's the thing that really got to me. I mean, you know, they're like cheering it on. Like, yeah, we got to do this, and we got to get this going, and da-da-da. You know? I mean, you're thinking, well, how the hell do you plan to be around? You know, you know what I mean?
Hey,
that's how
some of them were acting like they're going to be here another 10 years.
Another 20, that's like they're going to be here. Yeah, exactly. So I'm like, or more, you know what I'm saying? So that is inspiring in itself. Like, you know what I mean? That you have somebody that's dead gone, 90 years old, talking about, like, let's get this going. As if, like, they got a whole lot of time to enjoy what we're doing. You know what I mean? That is that's inspiring alone. You know, if somebody that old can feel that energized about getting these things done and about us getting together, then how come somebody just a fraction of their age can't get their mind around that? Like, you know, it's time to let go of the small stuff. And I don't know. And you know what? We know what the problem is. It's Ed. It's all that ego stuff. That ego is a destructive monster, okay? Everybody got one. Some of us can't control it. You know what I mean? And ego is a horrible thing because, you know, you think somebody is saying you're less than because they're doing something. You think that somebody is saying you ain't it because they're doing something. You think that somebody's trying to say that they it because they're doing something. Well, really, for me, anyway, it was just, I was even being pushed around by dead people. I don't know what was going on in my life, but I was possessed for like 4, 5, 6 months, you know?
Right.
I mean, I was literally possessed. And so, you know, I mean, it had nothing to do with ego because I'm sitting up here like I'm like post-seizure. Like I had a seizure and somebody just woke me up and, you know, oh, yeah, Lisa, all this happened. And I'm like, what? You know what I mean? Because that's how much I've been on a drive that has not been my own for the past 4, 5 months. So, I
right.
mean, this is just something that just came to me really, literally, not even 4 months ago. Okay, 3 months, you know, solid work, 4 months conception, this is it, okay? And it's insane, and of course nobody, you know, I'm surprised nobody supported me because it was ridiculous of an idea to even try to do something in 3 months like this. But the fact that the overwhelming support, you guys are amazing. I appreciate you, Tasha. Thank you. You know, Annie, thank you. Thank you. Thank you, Gabe. Thank you so much, Carrie. You know, I mean, it has been crazy. Cousins, the main ones I thought was not going to show up, showed up from all over. People I didn't know, like I said, California. What?
Yeah.
South Dakota. What?
Yeah.
What? Where?
Yeah.
What?
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying, y'all? I mean, if people can get themselves like that, then anybody who has all these daggone negative vibes, these attitudes about whatever, these criticisms, one thing we don't have time for is criticizing each other. One thing we can't, should not even tolerate amongst each other is trying to put each other down or sweating small stuff. We don't have time for all that. That's how they got us the first time. Okay? We already got to be careful of these daggone social political overseers they got in place. You know, these, you know, Henry Gates, these local African-American leaders. We already have to be aware of them. We got to dodge in and out of their daggone targets, their daggone arrows, not arrows, their gunshots. However, to have someone who was of the same belief, and not just belief, of the same nation, of the same people, of the same movement, to try to shoot others down, that's just ignorant. And it's not ignorant, okay? It's just
ego.
Like, you don't even get the other letters. You don't deserve them because it's just ridiculous. Like, you know, breathe. You are a special person. We love you. If you had been able to get yourself to come there, y'all would have felt the love. Like, y'all would have felt like it was crazy. Like, we was chilling, breaking bread, hanging out. Like, we knew each other forever.
After the event, you were sitting around a fireplace outside and, you know, having a good old time and the beauty of it. Okay, guys. About the Indian Council Summit. Press 1 if you want to join the conversation. Right now, we're going to go to 727. 727, you're on the Rich Report. What's up, Joy?
Hi, Jalito. It sounds so exciting. Jalito. I missed an exciting time.
I'm just listening
to all the energy and taking it in over here.
Yeah, it was great. You would have enjoyed it, Joy. You would have really enjoyed it.
Wow. Is there anywhere where you guys took pictures I can look at?
Did anybody
take any archives?
Tasha took the whole gang of pictures.
Tasha did three videos, I think.
She did three videos on
YouTube.
Okay.
I'll drop you a link.
Nice. It sounds really beautiful. This was in Virginia, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
Virginia is very beautiful, isn't it? It's very green.
Yeah.
Yes, it is.
Yeah.
So there was a lake. So you were near a lake, right?
Well,
no,
we're
near the bay.
The whole area is a peninsula. So there's ocean on one side and bay on the other.
Oh, my goodness. And what was the name of that bay again?
Chesapeake Bay.
Chesapeake Bay. Wow, I missed it. Sounds beautiful.
It was. Again, the one thing that you can tell is that when Europeans arrived here, they knew they were in a paradise. You know, if you can take away all that you see in the city, you know, the urban, blah, 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 and look at it, you know, through, and Eastville, it is like that. It's not urban. It's not urban at all. So you can tell that they knew they were in a paradise.
Are the Indians from that area? I wanted to ask the sister, the Indians from that area, are they related to the Powhatan tribe?
They're
kind of like
our queen was the daughter of Powhatan, actually. She was the daughter.
Okay.
Yeah.
Nice.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Beautiful.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, I don't want to hold you guys up. I just was taking in all this beautiful listening to the whole. I felt like I was there anyway. I'm listening to you, and it was like musical just hearing all the beautiful experience that went on over there. I got to make it to the next one.
Oh, yeah. It's definitely going to be big. Everybody's like really vibrating off of it. And we hope to keep the momentum going. Like I said, I think it's really important that we kind of spark off and do like little mini summits or think tanks in like all the areas and all our different places that we can get to. Like, I'm definitely going to New Jersey probably the year before the year's end, and definitely I think or after the first of the year, and maybe in Thanksgiving I'll go to Maryland, D.C. area. I don't know, but I definitely want to hit a couple of spots before the year's end, and then also do something in Atlanta because we have a lot of people that from Georgia that didn't make it that wanted to come, and Florida as well. There's some folks in Florida that want to make it that I just, you know, we couldn't bring everybody. Not this time anyway. So,
nice. Yeah. Sounds good. I don't want to hold you guys up. I'm just taking in the listening, and it sounds beautiful. Feel like
Thank
I
you.
Was there.
Yay.
Jeez.
Yep. Yep. It's definitely was great to have everybody together, and gee, the energy and people, like the thinking, and just everybody was just like, and the young people, like the real young, you know what I mean? The ones who are like either kids or still like in high school or just like starting college, that kind of age, like to see the look in their eyes and see how they were just like blown away. That was major too. I don't know if you caught any of that. Did you guys catch any of that?
Yeah, and more.
Right.
You can see the possibilities, because in places like this is what I mean about us having our own economy with the resources that are on this land that are yours.
Right.
You know, we can take these resources and rebuild a lot of these cities down here. The people who are in these major cities, Philadelphia, New York, Los Angeles,
right.
et cetera.
Right.
You know, you guys, that retirement and everything, because you didn't build nothing in them cities, transfer that wealth down back down here to where your people are from and rebuild these cities.
Right.
You know,
exactly.
come up with a new way to educate your children. You have everything at your fingertips.
Hey, we have all the skills. We're the most skilled, the talented, the most inventive people on the planet. There's no excuse that we have everything. We have the best and the brightest. You know what I mean? It was crazy that business wise, that food truck, Raquel. Raquel.